Yes, and we're looking at diverse weather conditions and diversity of culture with regards to how the weather affects you and how connected you feel to your environment. So, Samine, lots happening with the weather and lots happening with the environment and raising awareness on the environment. We have Earth Hour on Saturday, the 31st of March, and the World Wildlife Fund, in a collaboration with Emirates Wildlife Society, they are doing lots here in the region to raise awareness, asking people on Saturday evening between 8:30 and 9:30 to switch off non-essential lights or electrical appliances, to do your bit globally, because this is a global initiative all over the world. At the time of the Earth Hour, people will be doing the same thing and making a difference. Now, one of the initiatives which I thought was very interesting and fun is I Will If You Will Challenge, and Daring the World to Save the Planet. And this creative and engaging campaign provides an excellent platform for everyone to contribute to a global movement towards environmental action and go beyond the hour. So I Will If You Will Challenge. So it's asking people to say, you know, if you will switch off your phone and not use your phone for 3 days, then I will do the same, and maybe we'll raise awareness, and maybe we might raise some money, or maybe we can inform people better on the difference you're making by just, you know, compromising or going without or changing your lifestyle, becoming more connected with your environment.
That's right. And in order to change those behaviors, for it to become habitual, it can't just be reading about it or having more information or knowledge about it. I think this is a great initiative because it actually challenges us to change a particular behavior, and that could be quite contagious. And once you change that behavior, you might, for example, incorporate it into your daily activities. So if you're not using your computer, switch it off and don't leave it on all the time. Making sure that the lights around the house are switched off when you're not using them. Mobile phone, as you mentioned. So it starts as an initiative on one day and in 1 year, and then later we could incorporate it into our lifestyle and change our behaviors associated to becoming more pro-environmental.
I Will If You Will, Dare the World to Save the Planet. If you want to find out more details, then you can go online to worldwildlife.org and get involved. And this is, you know, global, but there's heaps happening here in the UAE for you to interact and engage and make a difference. Now, as we look at the planet and we look at the Earth and we look at what is changing perhaps around the world, it gives me pleasure to welcome my next guest to the show. That's Khalid Khalifa, who is a professional aid worker and head of the Gulf Office of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs. Good morning to you, Khalid.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And thank you for coming into the studio. I come down from Abu Dhabi this morning.
Yes, thank you for having me here.
So tell me about the work that you're doing with the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs here.
Thank you. I'm currently heading the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs. We have an office in Abu Dhabi that covers the six GCC countries, and we work on three main areas of cooperation with governments and non-governmental organizations, NGOs in the region. The first of which is capacity building, building the capacities of humanitarians and emergency responders, building the capacities of non-governmental organizations who are responding to disasters around the world, helping governments in preparing their preparedness plans for potential disasters in the future. The second element that we work on is partnership building, developing partnerships in the humanitarian sector between entities, whether governmental or non-governmental, in the region, in the Gulf, and the international humanitarian system, building partnerships, joint ventures, helping them work together to serve the larger humanitarian community. The last element that we work on is information sharing, helping organizations in this region to become more visible. They are doing great work in the field, but until now the visibility issue needs improvement, and we are hoping that this office will work as a bridge between organizations in the Gulf and the international humanitarian system.
So what warrants a humanitarian situation? I mean, what does that truly mean for somebody who's listening to this thinking, okay, yeah, that sounds good, but actually how do we define what is a humanitarian relevance, you know, relative, relevant and importance? How do we measure that?
Thank you for this question. It's actually a very big issue. I used to run the news service for the United Nations for 4 years in the region here, and it is the humanitarian news service. And every time we run a story, we struggled with the definition. Is this humanitarian or not humanitarian? What defines the subject as humanitarian? And I think our conclusion is what affects the life of people in general. A large amount of people, a large number of people in whichever way, whether it is a health issue, an emerging disease, for example, an environmental disaster, a conflict, probably a human rights issue that affects a large group of people, we define that as a humanitarian cause, and that's what we work for. Again, the definition is not very scientific, it's not very accurate, and I believe agencies differ amongst themselves about what is humanitarian and what is not.
So for you, how did you first get involved as an aid worker, and where have you worked? What have you done in your past?
I started as a development worker. I used to work for development agencies in Egypt. And then I realized that my dream is actually to be an international aid worker, to go out and help people wherever they are and wherever there is an emergency. And my first emergency response mission was extremely tough. It was the Iraq War in 2003. And in spite of going through a very difficult experience, I realized that that is indeed what I wanted to do. And since then, I've been moving from one disaster to the other around the world, between natural disasters and complex emergencies, which is conflict areas. And I tell you, this field is extremely addictive. Once you start in it, you cannot stop it. And when there is a disaster happening somewhere in the world and you're sitting here, you're itching. You feel that you want to be there. You do not belong in a place where you cannot provide real help in the field.
So contribute.
Yeah, so standing back and watching it in the news no longer is an option, right? You have to go in there and get involved. Do you feel you had a sort of characteristics or personality disposition before, while growing up? Is this something that you knew you always wanted to do?
Probably there are things that your parents kind of plant in you.
Certain values and
certain
principles.
Values teaching you that you need to help people, you need to think of others as well, you cannot be selfish, because we live in one world, and what you do today will get back to you in the future. And then your study and your general
life experiences.
Life experiences where you grow. I grew up in a very poor village in Egypt, and I felt that I managed to, through local development probably, I managed to help a small number of people in my country. But then there is a larger duty as a human being, not as a national of a specific country.
Yeah, one of the things that we refer to is a locus of control. So some people have an internal locus of control, some people an external locus of control. And someone like yourself, we describe as believes that even one person can help plant the seeds of change. So many people will say, I don't engage in pro-environmental behaviors because what difference is it going to make if I recycle, or what difference is it going to make if I offer some money to charity? And then others, thank goodness, have a completely different viewpoint and say, whether it's, even if it's just a little change, that is a grain of sand leading to a whole desert of change. So that's something that's also very important for us to consider. Now, these disasters that we talk about in the last quarter of the century, more than 150 million people have been affected by it, either directly or indirectly. So there's this issue of viewing it, whether it's from the behind a TV screen or actually being part of it. So what would you say are some of the physical and psychological effects of natural disasters we could use as an example?
I've participated in responding to mega disasters like the tsunami of 2004 that killed more than 240,000 people. And I was there for 2 years from the beginning, and I stayed for 2 years, and I saw the psychological development of the local population there. In the beginning, one of the very painful things that we needed to deal with is that you're actually working in a community that is shattered psychologically. And in spite of that, people used to feel that that's their mistake. I mean, when you speak to them, they say, you know what, we actually deserve this. We were not good enough, and this is a punishment from God. And it took us a while to work with the local staff who were working for us in Aceh, in Indonesia. And you are working with people who lost their families. Some of them lost all their families. So they have the personal issues to deal with. And at the same time, they are under this pressure that they need to help their village and their community, and they need to go on. And for the 2 years that I stayed there, I think the development or the improvement in the psychological condition of the people was very, very slow. And in such big disasters, it takes years and years, and probably the next generation will be over it, but it's not easy.
It's also very difficult to come out from another country and to enforce some of those values or belief systems. Already they're fragile and broken, and to come with a new set of values or principles can be kind of threatening for their own cultural standpoint, right? So very difficult to approach.
When we come back, we'll explore the culture even more, and to try and get an insight into what can be just the most horrific thing that can affect an individual, a society, a community, your family.